Good morning and welcome back to Excerpts from the ABBA Archives, the podcast that's not about ABBA, it's about us. My name is A. Kirby and with me as always is...
B. Peterson. Happy anniversary, sweetie.
Happy anniversary.
The day this comes out and the day that we're recording it, 1 year since we started this podcast. So, made it a year.
We were sitting in bed with the microphone set up, trying to make it work.
Yeah. Before I realized, oh, you know, my phone just sounds way better. So, anyway. Another 2 weeks to catch up on, but honestly, I'm not interested in going through everything. I just want to talk about the best stuff. Namely, The Peasants and X-Men 97. Because that's kind of... Yeah. So, yeah, we stopped the recording last time and then went and saw The Peasants. And all I knew going into it is that it had gotten mixed reviews and was from the people who did Loving Vincent, which is a film that I thought was merely okay. It was pretty, but merely okay. And then we went and saw The Peasants, the Magic Lantern, and the only two people in the theater.
Which is fun.
We were treated to one of the better films that I have seen in a good long while.
Yeah.
Certainly in terms of new releases, easily the best film that I've seen in at least a year. Like, there is no film from last year that I saw that was as good as The Peasants.
Yeah.
That even came close to it. Anyway.
It was pretty amazing.
You talk about The Peasants.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's just gorgeous. I love the rotoscope. It looks great. There's so much that I could watch about this movie without paying attention to the story. Like, I feel like I could just, like, my eyes are just drawn to watching how the painting moves with the actors.
Yeah.
It's a story about a young woman who gets married off to a much older man, you know, because of money stuff.
Yeah. And we're in the Darby O'Gill kind of economics situation where there's some far off guy who owns this entire town, and then everyone else is kind of leasing land from him, and marriage is an economic institution designed to move money around,
and everything is very land based and
And everyone,
pigs and cattle you have, and
And everyone is essentially fighting over scraps.
Yeah,
like everyone is poor. Even the rich folk are poor. All the actual wealth is hidden off screen somewhere, except for in the land, which is what they constantly fight over, and bicker over, and marry over.
And very, very patriarchal. Very, like, you want to inherit stuff from your father.
This is set in, like, 17th century, 18th century, 19th century, but it doesn't, like, it's very pre-industrial revolution.
Yes.
Poland, by the way. It's Polish film.
And she marries this guy, and...
Jagna?
Jagna, I think.
I think that's her name.
Yeah, and she has a relationship with her husband's son-in-law.
No, it's his son.
It's his son-in-law, because it's his daughter.
Yes. Yeah.
Hi.
Hello.
I like your hair.
Anyway.
Because the guy she marries has a daughter who has has a husband, right?
He's the son. He's the son.
Okay.
Because remember when they go off and they're staying with her dad? In, like, the outskirts of town? In the winter? I'm almost positive.
Okay.
I'm positive. Because he says he has three sons.
Okay.
He has the blacksmith.
Yeah.
He has the main one, and then he has the other one. He has three sons.
Okay.
Anyway.
But they do, like, they both call him dad, and it's very much like he is his son.
Yeah.
Or like
they are both their kids.
Yeah.
Anyway, and And later in the film, he's like, you're the only, I can't trust any of my sons. Mm. Don't let them get my money. Here, you take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, so she has a relationship. Because
I know so that she calls another old man who they're staying with when once they're exiled, dad.
But that could be, since they call both dad, both of them call him.
Yeah, I just,
anyway. I don't know. I'd have to see it again, I guess.
I'd love to.
Yeah, because that was my take.
Okay. I was also believed the same as you. Mm. And then later in the film, I'm like, actually, I think he's the son.
Yeah. Anyways, but he feels entitled to the father's land.
Yes.
And he, and
because he's worked on this land for a long time.
And the guy's like, well, it's my land, and
that's, I give it to who I want.
That's too bad for you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so there's tension because she's married to the father of the guy she likes,
mm-hmm.
and who. Who is all, and the guy she likes is married.
Yes.
So there's that. And then there's the tension of he wants his father's land, but his father just gave his land to the family of his new wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so is prioritizing the new young wife over his family.
Yeah.
Can
any relationship remain separate from the motivation to get property?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the mother base of the main character basically sells the daughter.
Off, yeah, for said land, for money.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous to look at, it's gorgeous to listen to, the score for this film, and there are several long sequences where people are just playing music.
The music is pretty great, it's amazing in this film.
Yeah.
The marriage sequence was, I think, what got me.
Yes.
It's so... Yeah. I don't know, so raucous and so mm-hmm. emotionally charged and so, like, the whole marriage scene is just so emotional.
Yeah, and when the whole film is so gendered, and then there's this moment where everyone just, and very, I don't know what sect of Protestant they are or whatever, but very, you know, there's a church is central to the film and the faith is, or maybe not even faith, but the church institution is central to the film. And then like in these little pagan moments that happen throughout where people are suddenly not, you know, men and women, but are just bodies moving together is when it kind of sings and like they're almost free of all of this structured these traps that they're in and it's just and it's the flow between all these things. Also, this is a great, this as we pointed out at the end, we were racing to make the reference to each other as the credits were rolling. This is the Vavitch. This is the witch. It's a young woman in a very conservative society, and she just has the smallest hint of agency, and everyone's like, nope.
And she's set up to fail.
Yeah.
Like, and then is
she is set up to fail. It. Yeah. Because just because she has just maybe slightly more promiscuous, you know, just like just slightly more interested in having a bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
And as a result, is essentially a demon to this community.
And once she starts to become a scapegoat, she is the scapegoat.
And until we literally have the exact same ending as the witch, with naked woman walking into forest to find her own power.
Yeah, and this is very much a movie, like, I started out being like, okay, this is very gendered, very patriarchal, mm-hmm. and kind of like,
Yeah, same.
And then at the end I was like, oh, that's the point.
That's the point.
Because at the start I was like, oh, this is awful, this is so patriarchal, and then by the end I'm like, yes, and that is the whole point of the movie.
Yeah. Again, fantastic visual feast. I mean, just I kind of adore this film. I went to a bookstore and found an excerpt of it. I've got another. There's a new translation that came out a couple years ago that is on order at the library. They're gonna have it hopefully soon, and then we'll be able to read it because I'm really interested in seeing in the adaptation whether this is you know, did they change? Is that ending really in there? Like, how much is the same, and how much have they changed? But yeah, I found an old volume of Nobel Prize winners for literature they had at this used bookstore in Spokane. And they have an excerpt from The Peasants with the 1924 translation, as well as commentary on the writer and his oeuvre. Mm. Anyway. So yeah, The Peasants. That's probably the highlight in terms of films that we've seen together in the past couple weeks.
Yeah.
In terms of television, though, X-Men.
Mm.
So there's this new X-Men, you know, because Disney bought Fox or whatever, and so everyone's like, oh yeah, the X-Men, and there's, you know, Deadpool and Wolverine.
And everyone loves 90s X-Men.
Yeah, they're starting to drop mutants in the MCU. I haven't seen the last few MCU movies, so they may have shown up already. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, like, we're getting Deadpool and Wolverine, so they're all like, yeah, everybody loves the X-Men. And I was like, okay, we're reviving the 92 series because that was a huge popular hit. And I'm like, okay.
Very more cash grab. For yeah, a certain generation.
Nostalgia, cash grab, you know, why not? And so I click play because my friend Bibbs is like, this is some really great stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. I know he likes the X-Men. Anyway, I know you like the X-Men, so I'll check it out. Just to see if it's any good. And oh my stars. So we, a long time ago, did a whole X-Men marathon of all of the live action, you know, X-Men films, with a couple exceptions. We didn't do Dark Phoenix. We didn't do Apocalypse.
I think those were the... and we didn't do some of the Wolverine ones. Oh,
and we didn't do the Wolverine, and we didn't do X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah. Did Logan, of course.
We did do Logan, yes. Anyway, and I haven't seen Dark Phoenix. I haven't seen X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I've seen all of them, but not recently.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, Logan, I mean, to reiterate, like, Logan is a great film.
It hits. It yes. slaps.
Yes, it's on another level from those others because it's trying other things. It yeah. is not, you know, beholden to the studio four quadrantness.
Yeah.
Rated R, it's a lot more violent. There's actual consequences to actions, though maybe not because Deadpool's now bringing them back.
It's a very character-based movie.
Yes.
It's small scale.
Yeah. And I think that's where X2 is at its strongest, is when it's character-based.
Mm-hmm.
I think X1 and X3 were more interesting because they looked at mutants on the more societal, political scale. And I think, surprisingly, X3 was the one that was my takeaway of, oh, this movie actually has some fascinating, amazing stuff in it.
Yeah.
Too bad it's just so cluttered.
If they took out the Dark Phoenix, because the Dark Phoenix stuff I really dislike in X-Men 3. It's very not...
You can go back and listen to the episode.
But the rest is very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just too bad it's so cluttered. Well, what if there was a show that took all that political stuff and made it the focus, and then also added great character work and great action and brutal consequences.
Yeah. All the good stuff.
Yeah. So, X-Men 97, you know, a couple episodes are okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Mojo
World
episode,
is
fine. Storm's, you know, going off on her own, has her own subplot with Forge. That's okay.
I really like that.
Okay, well.
I really like
that. I thought it was, you know, okay.
It's cute.
The first episode, you know, just setting up all the characters is decent. But oh my stars, episode 2.
With
their very own January 6th insurrection.
That one hit.
That is maybe some of the best superhero storytelling that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like a lot of the X-Men stuff that I've seen recently, and, you know, I haven't really stayed engaged with the newer stuff, but the X-Men stuff that I've been exposed to has always seemed really nostalgia-based, really trying to rehash the glory days of the...
Here's everyone you know and love.
60s, you know,
yeah.
The 90s or what have you. and yeah, very much like IP based.
Mm-hmm. And this is all the same characters from the 90s. You know, it's the people we know and love. It's the animation intro and the music that we know and love. But this is set now.
And it...
Like, it's set in 97.
Yeah.
But it's about now.
It's... And it takes... It adapts storylines from the 90s. Mm-hmm. And it is set in the 90s. But it's commenting on now. And I haven't seen any X-Men...
The language used
I've
is
seen
now.
No X-Men material... You know, part of that's my age, and part of that is what I've seen come out recently. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen anything so prescient, so blatantly commentary on our current politics. Pushing the envelope, having
on cops,
saying
on
what
alt-right
it
extremism, on the January 6th insurrection,
queer rights,
on. Yeah, assimilationism, like, everything. Like, it's all right there, and they're saying it out loud. Mm.
And I think the thing that I felt most strongly with the second episode in particular mm-hmm. was that it felt like old friends coming back to help.
Which you told me in tears.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't cry.
I don't cry.
I saw you cry twice in a day. Watching the show.
Yeah.
Episodes 2 and episode 5, which is where things get brutal. Mm. Yeah. The terrorist attack, the massacre at Genosha is so heart-wrenching to watch with specifically Magneto's character. Like, we will not spend our days thinking on how many more we could have saved. We're just going to do our best. And then he immediately kills hundreds of people by getting crushed into a statue of Xavier that goes and falls on hundreds of people. And he dies speaking in his German, don't be afraid, to this child who is about to die. Uh-huh. And then there's Gambit.
And they have...
And this is all in the same episode as, like, Jean and Cyclops and their weird dynamic with everything that's happened.
And I love that they adapted that from the comics, because that
the
dynamic is weird. It's
and they're
one of the storylines I'm
they're
familiar
not, like,
with.
Yeah.
And they are leaning into it.
And they're talking about it, and they're having long discussions about, like, you feel very strongly about two people and very... complex ways.
Oh.
Don't notice the edit. Just don't do it. I don't have to take my meds. It's fine. I will take my meds. Anyway. And they're leaning into this. And then there's everything with Magneto and Rogue.
And
which is, you know, on the surface, like, that's weird and provocative. You've got this much older man and this much younger woman, but they're adults and they're hot for each other. And this is wild. This is wild television.
Yeah.
How Bibbs said it is it's a soap opera with action sequences, and it really feels it in episode 5.
And I love how it takes this character storyline and melds it with the political one. And so we have, you know, I don't know, we're worrying the whole episode about, will Rogue pick Magneto or Gambit?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer by the end of the episode is, well,
they're
both
dead.
So and she picks Gambit in the end, but
almost, she says that she's going to pick Gambit, and then the attack happens and then he dies,
and he doesn't know, because he thought that she picked Magneto. And so there's you're expecting the resolution of the love triangle, and what you get is
just Rogue holding Gambit's dead body saying, I can't feel you.
That's really well put together in terms of those two, the way those storylines work.
And we just watched the new episode, which came out today, and this is the after an episode of break where we're off with Storm and Charles and space stuff.
Who hasn't
which,
been here the whole time.
I'm sorry, but the Shi'ar stuff is not engaging me. It's just like,
we don't.
This is a completely different show.
Yeah, and it doesn't have.
Also, I'm not the huge fan of Charles, so.
Yeah, to be honest, me neither. It and it doesn't have the, I don't know, the. it's harder to relate to our current world. So
especially when he's not James McAvoy or Patrick Stewart. Anyway, but then we finally, this is the episode dealing with the aftermath. Mm-hmm. And with the weird twist at the end of the last episode where it turns out that it was Bolivar Trask is, like, regretful about, like, he was forced to do it by Sinister. Mm-hmm. And then we're, like, trying to reconcile that. It was like, is the mutant going to be the big bad? Like, that feels like a cop-out. But it's not technically true since Mr. Sinister is a human who's a eugenicist. And so it's like, but it's still watering it down.
He's not a mutant, but he is, like, a super-powered,
over-the-top
villain. Yeah.
And then it turns out in this episode that Bolivar Trask is, as they literally say, the poor man's Oppenheimer, which is such a
love
great
this shout out.
He's like, I have become death. Ooh, poor me. My invention of mass destruction hurt people. And, and now I'm sad and now I'm going to die. And that's, and so I get to redeem myself by killing myself. And it's just, and then Rogue's like, no, you don't get to do that. I get to kill you. Anyway, and it's just, it's brutal. This is a brutal episode. Cyclops has become radicalized. Beast has become radicalized. Like, there's the discussion with the president and the optics and the coming out scene and the optics, and it's all...
What I really liked about...
It's so political. That's what I love about this. This is a big studio. This is my same thing with Dune Part 2.
Yeah.
This is a big studio. This is a bunch of money. This is a known IP. Like, people want to see this. What are you doing with it? You're making it really freaking political. Mm. And it's great. And I'm loving it.
Yes.
Calling out Captain America as America's top cop.
And which I love because I'm not a big fan, and that's mm-hmm. part of the reason is...
And then Rogue just like...
So I was like, oh, we have to deal with Captain America. And then I was like, oh, nice.
Rogue is like, screw you, cop.
This last episode is all about, you know, mutants who have dealt with this attack, this hate mm-hmm. crime.
And everyone's wanting them to respond to it in the way that they want them to respond to it.
And everyone is lukewarm. They're saying this horrible thing happened to us. Why can't you just be on our side? And people are being like, well, but that looks kind of bad for me. Or, well, you understand. And you under, like, it's like...
It's the optics.
I did have a person say to me, ask me, well, lesbians are weird, right? You think, you know, don't... You gotta agree, like, lesbians are weird. And I was kind of like, lol, why are you asking me? Like, I don't know, like, that's the thing I thought
yes,
of.
Yes, we are.
Thank you for noticing. But yeah, the kind of... I don't know. You understand why people be queerphobic, right? You understand that like it makes sense to be queerphobic. Like it's that energy of like
we have to, you know, there's a lot of sides to this. You know, it's like actually there's a side of a building that fell on people and you are not trying to help them.
Yeah, actually that's just a straight up hate crime. Yeah, and I loved that.
Just because they can vote for you doesn't mean that you need to appeal to them.
Yeah. That, yeah.
So yeah, this is just great television. And I'm loving it. Mm-hmm. And this is easily my favorite X-Men thing, period.
Yeah.
I don't know if the 90s went this, the 90s one went this hard, but...
Because I didn't see
I haven't seen any of the 90s. The
original.
But this one is, my new, what do they call it? New bae.
So. Yeah. And it's adapted, you know, like I got the comics that I read, a lot of them were from my dad and my uncle who would be collecting comics, when, you know, in the 90s when these storylines were coming out. And so I'm getting to see the storylines I read as a kid adapted.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Good stuff. There's a ton of other stuff that's happened in the last 2 weeks. We've been seeing everything at the Magic Lantern. Just quick rundown of everything we've seen at the Magic Lantern. I know we've talked about some of these before. But we saw Love Lies Bleeding, which you... sorry, I dropped the phone. Love Lies Bleeding, which you really, really liked.
Yes.
And I admired, but it's not really my thing.
It was my bag, baby, as the kids say.
We saw Richland, which is a documentary about Richland, Washington, the Tri-Cities, where I grew up, and its relationship with its nuclear past, and the fallout from that, ha ha ha. And my pun is that it hit really close to home. it was kind of an emotional experience watching that. Just seeing places and people that I recognized. And I think it's a very good documentary. It doesn't do a ton with the form, but in terms of a meditation on, this is a very weird white place that uses the atom, like the mushroom cloud as its logo for its high school. And it's just like school. The people's rationalizations of that is just very, and seeing how like this place kind of, like the place doesn't necessarily suck. The land doesn't suck, but like the culture has created an environment where people are being marginalized there, whether they're Indigenous American people who had their land taken away, or they're ignored by the government, or they're being poisoned and they don't know it, and yet they're still being pumped full of this America's great ideology that leads them to rationalize all of this.
And even if they're the ones being hurt.
Yes. Such that they defend this place that is killing them. Anyway.
And has killed many, many others.
Yeah. And not to mention, you know, Japan, and we have this artist who's based out of Portland, who is Japanese descent, coming in and talking about how uncomfortable all of this is and all of this whiteness is, and being surrounded and expect to forgive them on behalf of Japanese people.
When her relatives have been hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fascinating watch. And not one I'm gonna jump back into.
Yeah.
But yeah. Let's see here. What else did we see? What did we see with Richland? Did we do a double feature of Richland? No, we didn't. We were thinking of seeing Problemista, but we missed that. That was the one film that's technically played while we've been here that we missed.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we saw La Camera, Italian. A film from the director of Happy as Lazaro, a film that I thought was merely okay. And I think we both agree that this one is quite good.
It is quite good.
Dashes of magical realism amidst a very neo-realist take on poverty and history and, you know, gender dynamics in Italy.
Yeah.
Anyway. And yeah, the culture around how do we deal with its history physically.
Yeah.
I really quite liked it. There are bits at the end where I'm like, I can see this coming from a mile away, but other than those like plot, those, you know, grand plot points,
I still think they wrapped it up well.
Yes. I still think it all works. It was just like, I was just sitting in the theaters being like, yeah, okay. This is what's going to happen, isn't it? Yeah, oh, how cute. You know, how perfect. You know? But there are some great moments throughout. A Portrait of a Lady on Fire kind of women's ideal in an abandoned train station, which is really fun to inhabit towards the end of the film.
And I really liked how much people, I don't know, like, I think as you said, like, everyone's got to hustle.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to get something. Doesn't
matter.
Else.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if they're Josh O'Connor or Isabella Rossellini or the average Joe.
Yeah.
They've all got to hustle.
I'm gonna grab a jacket.
Okay.
Because I am cold, and it is distracting me. I'll be right back.
All
right.
Well, then I'm gonna vamp by talking about the dogs who are running around the lawn a lot. River's got the zoomies, and Juno B is getting bit because River likes to play keep away. And, oh, I'm also going to talk about how This is the last episode for a bit. It's 1 year. We did 1 year of weekly podcasts, with some exceptions, of course, because we didn't get to 52 episodes. But I think we're going to go monthly from here on out. Hello, Mom.
Hi.
Because it's been kind of kept getting pushed off, and it's not been the thing that we're excited to do as much as it used to be. And anyway, and we just kind of want to just talk about stuff on our own time and not have to schedule it. Like, yeah, it was a good way to start the conversations at the beginning and keep track of them. Mm-hmm. And now we kind of do that on our own anyway. So,
yeah, I think I don't know. I always feel the need to tell you about it.
Yeah. So let's just tell each other about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll do, I think, maybe once a month to talk about the best of the stuff that we've seen together.
Yeah, and maybe if we really need to,
we'll do a special episode about a thing.
Yeah.
One thing we saw. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Anything more on La Camera before we get to Wicked Little Letters?
Yeah, no, I thought it was a solid picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite liked it.
Wicked Little Letters is fine. It is second wave feminist to a T. Mm-hmm. It is very fine. I don't know. It's one gimmick is how much language it has. But Mom just threw a toothbrush over the fence.
I think that must be yours.
That's mine, yeah. We went to the dentist today for the first time in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
One of us has gingivitis, and one of us has early gum disease. Which one? We'll never tell. But neither of us have cavities.
Nice, nice. Yeah, so which means that we are making each other brush our teeth.
I guess, yeah.
Or I am making you brush teeth.
Yeah. And it's very not intersectional at all. This is a very Kenneth Branagh colorblind. What's the thing you were saying?
Oh, I was
Dave's.
Oh, I mentioned what Dave said.
Oh, no, Bridgerton, yeah. Or yeah. Alonzo, yeah. Bridgerton to Kenneth Branagh colorblind, race is not
Bridgerton
a factor.
Rules was the term.
Race is not a factor in this. Queer people don't exist.
Well, queer people do exist, but they're not.
Not in this movie.
It talks about they're mentioned briefly.
I don't remember.
I mean, the word sodomy is used repeatedly.
Okay, yeah.
And the word and the drunks and the queers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they exist.
But not in this movie. They're not here.
We don't see them.
Yeah.
They are referred to.
Anyway, it's a period piece that's too slickly produced, and Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley are fun, but there are a couple side characters that are cute, but this movie's fine. I don't know. I just was not.
I enjoyed this one. I think this is.
Sure, I enjoyed
this
it.
This is not. And I don't know. And I don't know I needed it to be more.
It was funny watching it in a theater crowded with middle-aged to slightly older white women going like, whispering plot points to each other like, did she just do the thing? Oh, I think she just, oh, wait, who is she? And that was half the enjoyment. And also half the frustration of it, of just being like, yes, can we move on?
Or like hanging out with a bunch of middle-aged older women watching Olivia Colman cuss.
And just being like, oh, she cussed. And like, oh, Olivia Colman's so good. Yeah. I'm like, she is good. And she's good in this. But like, my word, the whispers make her out to be the second coming.
Yeah, but no, it's nice. I love a supportive group. I don't know. It's fun to watch movies with people who like the movie.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
I don't know. I think I enjoyed this one more than you.
Yeah.
Again, like you said, you know, it's fine. The movie as
it
I don't
is
know,
not doing anything to push cinema forward.
Right. But I'm going to say I'm not going to hold that against it.
Trying to.
Right.
But anyway, I just
yeah. Yeah, no. All your critiques are fair. Well, I'm going to say what I liked about it.
Okay.
Which, I don't know. I mean, the reason I went was like, I was like, Olivia Colman period piece. I will enjoy. Olivia Colman cussing in a period piece.
Sure.
I will enjoy this. And I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, Yeah,
no. Well, and also Jesse Buckley cussing in a period piece.
Yes. Yeah, no, I...
out loud. Whereas Olivia Colman's doing it in writing. Spoilers. Oh. Oh. Sorry, it's not like it's telegraphed from the beginning. Anyway.
I know. I didn't know for a lot of it. I don't know. Anyway. It's fun. I quite enjoyed it. Yeah, it is, as you said, very blunt.
Mm-hmm. As subtle as a brick.
Yes, but I feel like if I can go, okay, it's we're doing colorblind casting, no intersectionality, and we're doing over the top second wave feminism, and we're doing blunt.
Yeah,
I can be like, okay, that's the movie.
Men are boobs and stupid and mean.
Well, not all of them. The partner.
Oh yeah, okay,
he's
chill. Yeah, okay, the one. So not all men, sorry.
But Timothy Spall.
Oh, yeah, Timothy Spall. Oh, Timothy Spall.
But, I don't know, the fun of Olivia Colman, I don't know, at the end, learning to curse properly and to do it freely. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you put it well, no one has a bad ending.
Yeah.
Including Olivia Colman, who is the ostensible antagonist.
I found it... I don't know, should I do spoilers?
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I found it really sad. Like, so she's the one doing it. Mm-hmm. She gets carted off at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But has an abusive father. And it's a great out to get her away from him.
Yeah.
She has her...
And her last moment is nice.
Yeah, and she finally her very like repressive father. She colorly finally just
telling
cusses,
him, yeah, colorly him tells out. Him off.
And then I don't know. And then like is just laughing at the end, and just like she it has released whatever she needed to let out, and like is. I don't know. I found her ending really satisfying, even though she's the one who got it. She, you know, I don't know. She got what she needed.
Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah.
And then, we're about to go see Civil War.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to see Challengers, and we're going to see Evil Does Not Exist, and we're going to see La Bête with Léa Seydoux, and we're going to see Robot Dreams and everything else that comes to this theater.
We hope.
That's the idea.
That's the plan.
Anyway. And we're watching Daredevil and Jessica Jones, and we're going to play Ticket to Ride all day tomorrow. And
have we seen anything else?
Oh, I'm sure. Mm. We watched The Witch after we saw The Peasants.
Yeah.
We saw On a Beach at Night Alone again. I'm starting up the Hang Seng Soo cycle again just to give myself something to do.
Which is good.
I saw Claire's Camera. It's eh.
I remember going after your toothbrush.
Oh, no. I'm just started Woman on the Beach. So I'm finally getting, because I'm doing the alternating. I started in the middle of his career, and now I'm bouncing until I get to the beginning and his most recent film, because he's three more have come out since I started this a few months ago.
Just cranking him.
Yeah. Anyway, it's finally back to the point where he's shooting on film.
Fun.
So that's comfort watching for me, I guess, is Hong Sang-soo.
I think Hong Sang-soo would be a nice one to go out, get takeout.
Yeah.
You get some takeout, you get some nice, like, Martinelli's, and you just sit down, and, like, you just kind of chill. And then we're all eating and drinking and sitting around.
We just need to. The thing is, we'd have to get drunk and smoke as well,
right?
And also be infidelitous, and one of us has to be an aging director with a weird libido. Another has to be a young woman of some kind.
So we have a lot of work to do to make that work,
to achieve his dream,
right? And there has to be some ennui. You know, so we got to time it all right.
Yeah, got to set it at Cannes. Hey. That's where Claire's Camera said it, as Isabella Huppert again. Anyway, Gotta also, find a beach. I've been listening to Taylor Swift music a lot, and I'm finally, we've just hit Reputation, because I've been listening to, you know, two versions of every single song because of the original and also Taylor's version. I know that they're basically identical, and it's just for rights purposes, but I'm just, you know, I gotta get through the whole discography. Anyway, in my word, turns out that, nope, I'm not a huge fan, but maybe we're getting to stuff that's finally interesting, but at the same time, it's still just pop. Mm-hmm. And I have yet to find a song that I'm like, I love this song. It's more like, hey, that's one that I could listen to again.
I think I've enjoyed it.
You listened to it on a road trip.
Yeah.
We've listened to many hours of it.
I think I'm not really, not all of it is for me, but I love, yeah. I don't know. I feel like there are some songs where it's like, I don't know, like, I could totally just, like, put this on and just, like, chill. Because, like, I really, sure. I liked it for the car ride in the sense that it is peppy, a lot of it, or reasonably happy. It's not going to depress me, and so I can just put it on, and it's, like,
and then occasionally we'll get Never Grow Up, and you'll...
Which I did not like for personal reasons.
Yeah, that song is,
But, yeah, I will say, we did listen to the first song on Reputation.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, I like this.
Yeah, which is what I felt listening to 1989. Like, immediately, like, we hit Welcome to New York, and I'm like, oh, I'm actually engaged. Slightly. Anyway, so.
I can see how, I don't know, this is what I think about, like, AC/DC. If you like their stuff, you will like
their stuff.
There's like if this is what you like, there is a lot of it to like.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. A known quantity.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Before we make our bow.
I've really had a good year.
Yeah. It's been a fantastic year of being together and consuming stuff together and talking about it and analyzing it. It's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's probably good to, I don't know, to quit it at a, to quit, I don't know, the every week at a year.
Yeah. And we'll go to monthly.
Just a solid
yeah.
break.
I don't know. So we're not obligated to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we are welcome to.
Yes. All right. I love you, sweetie.
Love you.
And, yeah.
Thanks for a great year.
Me? What do you think, Junie?
She wants you to throw the ball. She knows you have it.